All right, and welcome back to another Conquest Corner. On this particular episode, we are going to be going through why you should be playing The Plague Home. This is currently probably the last part, although unless I do a separate one for Sorcerer Kings, but I've done tons of videos of them, so I still might do with this style, but we'll get to that. But otherwise, for a moment at least, this is the last in a series of videos I've been doing that try to give for new players sort of overview of each of the factions, a little bit about their lore, a little bit about their rules, play styles as I see them, why to play them, and also importantly, maybe why you shouldn't, and then a bit of how to kind of get into that faction. I've done previously all of the other ones, although some bits have changed because obviously there's rules updates, so the basic ideas are all there, although sometimes some of the nitty-gritty details related to the rules do change, of course. Might still try to go back and redo some little bits of that, time-depending, of course. Keep in mind for this and for anything else Conquest-related, I'll do quite a bit of content for it, but also, if you're looking to pick up anything for Conquest, we do have a discount code. It's Terrain Kickers. We also have a link down below in show notes. It saves you 10%, helps out the show, and it really does help make sure that things run smoothly and can happen over here and cover all of our costs and all those sorts of things and be able to help us try to keep bringing you good content. As of recording of this is a Sunday night. Tomorrow I'll be recording a battle report, recorded a short one related to 30K today. So all those sorts of things, as well as, you know, keeping up with all this really happens because of the support of the people who do watch and or listen, depending on the avenue in which you go through our content. All right. Now, I've said this before, as I've in some of the previous videos I've done, so I want to get this out there first. I'm not a big fan, personally, of the Dwarg. And that is a pure personal thing. I'll get into a little bit of it later. Now, that doesn't mean it can't be for other people. It doesn't mean that there's something inherently wrong with them. It's just not my style. And that comes from the very classic, as we'll put it, sort of dwarf, depending on the system. In fantasy, even the Pearl's dwarfs, other systems, dwarves, Dwarg Home, a variety of other names for that sort of thing. But their general playstyle and bits to them, it's just not the thing for me personally. And we'll get into all of that. However, I don't want that. My hope is that that belief doesn't come across in anything I'm going to say here. Again, I can be excited about something and not necessarily want to do anything with it. And you can definitely get excited about it. They put out different factions for a reason. They're not going to appeal to all of us. At least hopefully not, because otherwise that's far too much money. So let's get into a little bit and start discussing some of the rules. Keep in mind for these... lore overview, not the rules. I think I said rules a second ago, but this is going to be the lore part. When we get into the lore overview, the goal is to just give you an overall impression of it. I'm not going to go through it in all the little perfect details. You can read plenty of it that they post up, but I want to kind of surmise it and kind of put my own spin to certain things. So for the lore, the title I put down was Anger Made Manifest. In order to understand the Dwarg Home, you had to think about the primordial. So remember, essentially you have this primordial essence that permeates the universe, and it sort of coalesces into gods or pulls on locations or all those sorts of thoughts and power. So when in this world, or in this universe, I should really say, it's more than just the world of Aya, it's more of the universe. When they talk about, you know, gods or power or anything like that, sort of the supernatural, you may call it, you're often talking about sort of this primordial essence. You know, creation and destruction were some of the first ones. Then there's war, which is the one that we're mostly going to be concerned with here. It was imprisoned deep within the earth in what could almost be like a temporal location, almost outside of space and time to some sort of extent. And that was by the dragons. So dragons are not a primordial essence, really, but more of beings that have been around for, you know, not as long, but almost as long, or at least for what you would call history purposes, as long. Now, the reason we're talking about the dragons, because the dragons are the ones who created the Dwarg Home. They created them to essentially be, you know, servants, artisans, to fulfill whatever needs as a servant-based class that the dragons happen to require. Now, The dragons of Ea are the same as our mythological sort of dragons, that their goal is to hoard and accumulate wealth and power and whatever that may happen to be. So the more that you have, the more important you are. That was their goal. So one thing they did for the Dwig is that they gave them a perfect memory. So they also gave them very long lives, I should say, as well. But they gave them this perfect memory so that way, if they're going through and learning the skills of crafting and all of that, that they know everything they need. This long life means that they can work in servitude for longer. And that, to almost an extent, that memory is sort of almost passed down, that you remember what, was experienced by the other generations, so that way you have that information to be able to craft and all the different things they want you to be able to do. As we find out later, it does something a little bit different for them, but essentially they remember things perfectly. I don't know for sure if it is sort of a ancestral memory, but it feels that way. At least the way it's discussed, it almost feels that way to me. And that's kind of the way that I see it. So, through this subjugation, or sorry, I should say with subjugation here, it's not that the Dwag didn't fight back because they didn't want to. They almost couldn't. If the dragon asked them to kneel, they really couldn't refuse it. And the ones who even refused it for a moment ended up getting punished for that. So they were exiled to the deepest mines to go and excavate again for the dragons. The thing is with the Dwag, much like most dwarves or anything else that you know them in, they dug deeper and deeper. And what they found there was essentially the prison of war. So war itself was imprisoned, like we said, effectively almost in the center of the earth. And the Dwaghelm, as we later learn which factions and key pieces it was, but they essentially found war. And they decided to unlock him. They used it to gain power. They gained such things like more protection from fire and other abilities like that. And they wanted to use this to be able to destroy their old masters, the dragons. So this was what we call the shattering. This was possible essentially because they're able to throw off the ties that bind. Before, they weren't able to stand up to the dragons because they were created to be unable to do so. Finding war, unleashing this power, taking this power in within themselves, was able to allow them to push forward past this, and now they could actually take on the dragons. War, however, is not of peace, which makes sense. I mean, the name is war for a reason. This power they took into themselves meant that the Dwag want nothing more than to fight, and they'll fight amongst themselves unless there's something better, and better being just about any other target. It's about the only thing that they agree on is that, might makes right, that they need to, go out, fight, whatever it may be. And we'll talk about some of the different factions, sort of where they want to steer that, of course, a little bit different. But pretty much that's the agreement that they have. They also have these Manementors. So the idea is, ones who are focused on memory, on knowledge, on information, they keep the information for their history, their hostility. If you're anything used to fantasy, it's, the Book of Grudges, essentially. So they remember all the key pieces that are needed. Again, so maybe they don't remember it person to person, but the Manementors do know all of this. But again, I kind of see it as a little bit of an overlap either way. So the Dwag were born in subjugation. Through tapping into the powers of war, were able to throw off their bonds. They destroyed, or at least made most of the dragons fled. I know they do specifically mention how some of them left, but other ones I'm sure were destroyed, or maybe a good amount of them were destroyed. And it left them almost broken in a certain way, where now their only desire, at least a base level, an instinctual level, their desire is to fight and claw their way through. So that's a little about the Dwag proper. Let's get into factions. So we'll start with the Ardent. The Ardent are the ones whose ancestors are the ones who actually freed War. And part of the way they freed him is actually by more of consuming his essence. Remember, this is a primordial essence, spirit almost, and they consumed it. So they believe that the fate of the Dweg for constant war was made when they first Dweg were made to kneel to the dragon and they could not refuse. So all Dweg pretty much agree that war is what we're here for. They just disagree on the why. So the Ardent say, well, you know what? This fighting spirit was put into us when we were told to do something and we couldn't refuse. And that's what really put us together. Their initiates are taught combat, honed to a razor's edge. So as soon as you are old enough to realistically wield a weapon, then you are getting trained and prepared for a life of war. Now, they do undergo a pilgrimage. I'm going to absolutely butcher this name, I'm sure. Dokoro? It's spelled crazy. My computer is underlined, but I'm going to call it Dokoro. And the idea is this is a pilgrimage to war's prison. So, Dweg society is essentially different holds, different creches or groupings, mostly underground. And all of these have a pit. And at this pit, it plunges its way essentially towards war's prison, towards the center of the earth. So in that center of the earth, it's where the primordial power of destruction is kept, and that influence corrupts all around it. So when you're making this pilgrimage, the further you go down, one, the more honored you are for having done so, and the worse it is down there, because now you're talking about different sort of creatures and monsters being created almost. Remember when you were a kid, and maybe not everyone did this, that sort of game where there was, you know, something kids didn't want to go to or were worried about. Maybe it was the fence of the mean neighbor's yard. And the game was essentially who could get closest to the fence before you chicken out and run away. That's what the Ardent do. That is what this Draco is. This is their, can they go touch the fence? And the fence is war's prison. They believe the Ardent, and again, if closer you get, the more important you become, the better you are in their portion of society, and then you go and wage your wars as everyone else. The big thing with the Ardent is they fight not because it's needed. We're not fighting because we have to fight. We're fighting because it's just who we are. Dweg Home are fighters, so we're going to go out there, we're going to fight, we're going to prepare for battle. We are going to do everything we can to beat whoever it is that we can. So that's a little bit about the Ardent. For the Tempered, are essentially the other facet to this. So the Ardent look for war. We fight because we can. The Tempered use war as a sort of the same way a blacksmith would temper a weapon. You heat it up and then you plunge it into the cold. Essentially, you, not that you break it, but essentially that you put it under stress and strain, and that's what makes you stronger. That's sort of the way that the Tempered look at it, that all of this war is really a way to reforge themselves. So when originally the Ardent were breaking the chains that bound war, the Tempered are the ones who imbued the Dweg with this primordial power that war had. So they're the ones who brought it into themselves. So in some respects, they're the ones who caused this pure warring nature to become reality. They did this by essentially imbuing the race with the raw and mental might of the throne of war. They said this was their downfall. This was, for all intents and purposes, the downfall of the Dweg, and now this unending desire to war has come out. Again, if you're used to other games, you're looking almost more of an orc perspective mixed with a dwarf perspective from other games as well. Their goal, though, is that they want to master their craft and control their destiny. So they look at it as, we're here, we're designed, we want nothing but war, but we can focus this, that we can improve ourselves, and that we can become better, you know, wizards, mages, all of that, whatever nomenclature you may want to use, but we can become better and better through using that. And that can take us to the pinnacle of what a Dwe can be. In particular, they see the metal mages as the best form of this. So while other mages can do similar effects, you know, they could heat up a metal to reform it, let's say a fire mage. A metal mage actually just changes it because they can change the metal themselves. So they look at it as the culmination of what it is that they want. You are now exerting direct control of what it is you want, rather than controlling the pieces around it to manipulate it. And that's sort of the way the Tempered see themselves. Our goal is to fundamentally work on and alter what a Dwe is, rather than try to influence it from the outside. And of course, I'll admit, when reading through this, I thought nothing but Avatar The Last Airbender, we were talking about this and metal bending and all of that, of course, because I'm a nerd of many things. The other one they talk about is the clans. The clans are pretty much everyone else. The clans encompass, at least as I understand it, more of when you're looking at the crash or the hold that they're in. The clans are different groups inside of there. And probably members, some of them are members of the Arden or the Tempered and all of that. But this is your family, for lack of a better term. The goal of all Dwe is to improve their Agum. Agum is essentially their worth. So Dwegholm fully believe that there's a way to mark your value. And the more valuable you are, the better you are in every way in which you can be better. Remember, Dwegholm don't actually forget anything. They have perfect memories. Which means, one, you could remember a slight that happened to you an exceptional long time ago, but you can also remember every little tribulation that someone has ever experienced, both you or a person around you, a person in your clan, someone in an opposing clan that you're hoping to improve upon or be better than. So another thing, I didn't touch on this, but they mentioned this. Dwe don't have to hunt, gather, farm, any of that sort of thing. They have automata and their own subjugated peoples to do that for them, which means they can take all their time for other pursuits, like war, improving themselves, or becoming more important. So where you sit in society is very big for Dwegholm. They want nothing more than to up their place. So much so that, much like the pharaohs of old, when they die, they are entombed with all their worldly items, all their possessions. I should say possessions is a good word. Sorry, I'm a little bit sleep deprived. So they get all their possessions. And if you have enough that you need a bigger crypt, all the better, because now you look all the more impressive because of it. So you take it all with you. And you do that so that way you are more important. You feel more important. And then, they don't necessarily say this, but this would probably be true, I would think, in a society like this, that if in general your clan over some amount of time has had the largest crypts, then that means your clan is more powerful, more worthy, more important. And you can probably use that to throw your weight around, at least to some extent. They're show-offs. At the end of the day, really what it boils down to is they're show-offs. Now, the one thing all Dwegelik said, follow along with or agree on, is that fighting, we should fight each other. Fighting is the ultimate test, whether it's from lowly serfs or bringing whole holds to battle because elders are disagreeing. So they look at fighting as a way to improve themselves. When you become more important, then you're better known. You are fighting from a higher position and you can have more people fight for you. So that's what we're looking at when we talk about the Dwegholm. All right, so that gives you a little bit of an overview of them. Well, after that overview, at the point now, we'll start talking a little bit about the rules and all of that, and discuss the way they work currently. Now, as of filming of this, it's late April. This obviously could change. Let's hope they don't change it too fast, but obviously things here could change. All right, so army rules. Dwegholm really have three rules. First rule is very simple. Normally in this game, when you think about your reinforcement line, can never cross an enemy regiment. You can't count regiments that are in contact with the enemy, all of that. Dwagon don't care about that. They ignore enemy regiments for all purposes of reinforcement. So they can basically show up wherever from where their units are without regard of where your units are. A strong ability, to be sure. Second rule here is pursuit of Agum. So pursuit of worthiness. Big thing with pursuit of Agum, it tells you, is that your infantry regiments, the command stand can challenge people, can try to duel people. There's no minus if the character your opponent has declines this duel. However, you're not allowed to decline a duel twice. So that does mean that you may not have the negative repercussions for refusing the duel, but you can't refuse again. So they get another command stand in there later, can duel you. Or, and this is a free additional duel action, I should mention that. You get a free additional duel. So you can do whatever else with the normal stands or the regiment general, and then your command stand can try and duel. This does mean that if you refuse it one time and they bring another unit in, you can no longer refuse it. And there's some bonuses that will happen if they end up taking you out. When the command stand takes wounds, though, it goes to them. Same thing for morale. It doesn't spill over. If that command stand that the Dwag have gets destroyed, boom, free reform, put it back together. That stand's obviously gone, but put the rest of the unit back together, because remember, your command stand is in the middle, or middle-ish, depending on if you're even or odd amounts. If they do take out your character, then they gain bravery, tenacious, and indomitable. Bravery means terrifying, fearsome, all of that, no longer apply. There's some other small bonuses. One of them is that you auto-unbreak at the start of an activation. Tenacious and indomitable both essentially say, count a success. Tenacious is a success on morale, indomitable is a success in combat, if memory serves. You pass a failed defense save. Tenacious also makes you immune to fearsome, but you're already immune to fearsome because you're brave. So their character stands want to fight essentially your characters. Now, this has actually gotten a lot better more recently, because characters in general, there's some outliers, of course, but characters in general are not nearly as combat-oriented as they used to be, because you don't have retinues anymore. You used to be able to take a variety of, essentially, extra upgrades. Since you don't have those anymore, that your characters don't tend to hurt quite as much, which does mean that if a command stand can fight them, there's a better chance that the command stand can actually do some good. Now, of course, there's spots where you don't want to do this, but some of your command stands, say in your... which ones? Who do I want to think of? Dragon Slayers, actually. I checked. That's probably the one that comes most to mind. You know, your command stand there, if your opponent is armor-based, you're fine with that. You're going to do great against them. As someone who started playing Sorcerer Kings, most of my characters, even my fighty characters, for anyone just listening, not watching, I did air quotes on that, but even my fighty characters don't survive very great versus dedicated combat. So they can call out your characters, and they get bonuses for the rest of the battle, mind you, and take them down. The other thing that you get, your third rule, is your creed. Creed depends on who is leading it, who your warlord is. If your warlord is an Ardent Karawa, then your creed is that when your unit breaks, the first time it breaks in the whole battle, each one of your regiments, when they break, unbreak immediately. You essentially either get a free rally or combat rally. So the second you would break, unbreak. That does mean that this going broken to shatter only works if you previously broke them. Because let's say it's 8 stands, just for nice numbers. 8 stands, you take out 4. Naturally, that would be a break. 2 more, shatter, remove all 8. So kill 6 to remove 8. Well, now it's 4 would break, unbreak. Then two more for breaking, another one for shattering. So you do need more. Now again, 8 is a ridiculous example. I chose a high number so you could kind of see it, just for illustrative purposes. But that one is it's quite strong because it means that break to shatter isn't going to really occur, nor is it easy. And notice, it's the first time you become broken. So if you have another way to break them, because there is other ways to break people sometimes, some spells and stuff like that, that they unbreak immediately, which means your ability to... Remember, if you're broken, you can't do things like charging and all of that. You can't affect them with any of that. So that's if you take the Kerwa. If you're taking the Tempered either Sorcerer or Steel Shaper, you get Tempered Creed. Steel Shapers and Sorcerers are your casters, so elemental potency helps with casting. So when a friendly character stand performs a spellcasting action successfully, you get an elemental power marker. You can spend a marker to automatically count a success for a single defense, clash, or morale die from one of your friendly regiments or a character stand that's within 8 inches of the Sorcerer or the Steel Shaper. So every time you cast a spell, gain a token. Later, with an 8-inch bubble of one of these two types of characters, auto-pass, like I said, a defense, clash, and morale. You can use up to 5 of these tokens at once and one action. You do have to declare it before you roll, so you can't do it retroactively. And if you wouldn't be allowed to make a roll, so they said if someone was hitting you with smite and you just don't have anything, then no. You don't get successes. Remember, essentially in this game, you're always allowed to roll the dice. There's just not a guarantee it does you any good. Here, no, you don't get it. If smite, you don't have an armor, and you have no evade, you just get nothing. So, that is their overall rules. As we see, their rules play into elemental potency a little bit differently, but it plays into more defensive and bullying. You know, they show up where they want with that firstborn. Pursuit of Agam, I'll just challenge you. I will just be oppressive. And the Creed, depending on which one you take, one of them means you are really not hurting them by breaking, at least not until they already break once in the game. And Tempered Creed, quite strong because the casting is a really big thing here. All right, that gives a little bit about the rules. Let's talk a little bit about playstyles. All right, when we think of playstyles, now again, any of these factions can be played in a variety of ways, and in no way am I trying to make this comprehensive, but I just want to give some sort of, essentially, themes. I usually try to give 2 themes of where to steer towards. The themes that I see for this are magic or brick. So, for anyone who maybe doesn't know, magic tends to be quite strong, so magic also means that you resolve all of that. They have toned them down a little bit, but it used to be even crazier, but Tempered Sorcerer, School of Fire, used to do tons and tons of damage. Still does decent damage, don't get me wrong, but used to be even crazier. But partly the reason it was crazier is because you could get some auto successes and rerolls and all kinds of stuff. That kind of stuff's mostly gone. But when we take a look at this Tempered Sorcerer, when you look at Fireball, 1 hit per success, attunement 3, not scaling. And armor piercing too. So if it's a heavily armored target, you get it through. If you don't need that and it doesn't matter, then you could go for a coruscation, which is attunement 4, which is just hit. So if they have terrible armor or are just going to go to evade anyway, just hit them with that one instead. They'll take some wounds, morale, hopefully take some more wounds, start really punishing some people. You also have flame wall as well. And it tells you there. And it says, at least 3 successes are scored, target enemy regiment cannot get inspired. It used to do like double hits, I think it was. It used to be even nuttier. They're still quite strong, but it used to be even nuttier. I'll be honest, I don't really see a lot of the other ones. Earth is good for defense, if you want a defense type build, because you're getting +2 defense. Enemies aren't getting their impact, is another one of the spells. Or you gain Tenacious. And Indomitable, I should say. Sorry, Tenacious and Indomitable. So Earth is more of your defensive school. Magma relates to zones. So if you happen to be one where you have a lot of zones or you really are playing those sorts of missions more often, you're going to do a lot of good there. So Tempered Sorcerer can pump out some damage. Remember, when you cast a spell, that you get one of your elemental markers. And for things that you can do with this guy, I believe it's in our mastery. Where is it? Oh yeah, Tempered Sorcerer we're talking about right there. Hellbringer Sorcerer. For 5 points, you can put him on Hellbringer Drake. And obviously we'll talk about the Hellbringer Drake in a moment, but and you can purchase multiple times. So you have multiple of them, put them on Hellbringer Drakes. Let's get that Drake and talk a little bit about it. Notice it has a shooting attack with AP 1 at 16-inch range, and it has a draw event called Overcharge. The regiment places an overcharge marker beside its stand. So when it draws, when it goes, get an overcharge marker. When you take a volley, you can get rid of as many of them as you like. When you get rid of them, you get two more barrage, so two more shots, plus one armor piercing. But the armor piercing value can't go above two. So if you spend one token, your 12 shots armor piercing two. You spend two tokens, you are 14 shots armor piercing two. You don't get better armor piercing, but you are getting two more shots per. And character stands that are on it don't get those benefits. So in other words, the Tempered Sorcerer does have a shot, a barrage shot. You're not getting extra shots on that. So Hellbringer Drake with base 10 shots at 16 AP 1. Your Tempered Sorcerer has 5 shots at 16 as well, so very well fits in there. You're looking at 15 shots. Some of them are AP 1, but essentially 15 shots. And if your Sorcerer went first, then you have an auto success for later, and your draw event, since it just went off when you drew your Hellbringer Drake, that means you could just fire 12 every time if you want, or save them up for that time when you need a whole lot of shots. So there's, you know, a magic and unit combination. We do have some other ones, of course. Steel Shaper's fine. Steel Shaper has some different spells as well. When we take a look at, other options there. Your wizards can get precision shot, I should say. You could become focused. You can get some rerolls on those dice. Tempered Shield Saber. Here's his. Ferric Throne. He can go on a Stoneforged. So let's pull up now. Stoneforged, you don't quite have yet, but you will in the future. But you notice, so here's your guy casting off the back of it on a 20 wound, 10 attack monster that has a good amount of impact, has good cleave at cleave 2, fearsome. Unstable alloys. So if someone's going to shoot at it, it counts as having hardened 2, and spellcasters need 2 additional successes. So big and hardy. But again, related to your magic. With these, you're probably looking also at units like Flame Berserkers. Then you're kind of putting whatever you want. Flame Berserkers are very fitting. I could see Infernal Automata would be fine. Really, whatever it is that you want. Anything else, I think, probably works pretty well. But you can lean a bit into the magic. You can take a couple sorcerers. You can cast them out from drakes. Big monsters are a tough thing to deal with. So you can do probably a lot of cooler, fun stuff there. The other thing I see with that is obviously running as a brick. So this army, it's no surprise, dwarves in general in almost all games are defensive. And they have ability to be defensive. These guys can still hit hard, but if you look at some of these units, if we take a look at Dragon Slayers, Resolve 4, Defense 3, Hardened 2. So they're pretty much on 3s, unless you're Smite or Cleave above 2, which happens, but rather rare. And they themselves are Cleave 3 Fiend Hunters, so they're hard to take down, deal a bunch of damage, a lot of wounds. You'll notice the average in this faction is the 5 to maybe 6 wounds per base. When we take a look at some other ones, say, Holdings, they're 3s but with a shield, so on 4s, hardened 1. So essentially, they're on 4s most of the time. When we look at Wardens are 3s but, Resolve 4. We see a good Resolve. Resolve 4. Defense 4, which will not Steel Forged. Resolve 4 for the Ironclad. Initiates, Defense 3, but shields. Resolve 3. Big enough unit, you're going to be at least at 4s. the Infernals on threes. So nothing here other than I think the whole Ballista, and that might actually be it. Yeah, the Flame Berserkers are Resolve 5. So your models, your units, your regiments can be very tough to move because you're looking at an average armor between a 3 to a 4. There are some upgrades characters can take and stuff like that as well that give them hardened as extra. So you can really buff these guys out and make them hard to move. We talked about if you're being led by Arnett Karawa that, hey, the first time you break, nope. So you're going to be hard to break. And when you break, it doesn't really do anything for you. Oh, and also, I forgot to say, the Arnett Karawa casts spells as well. So when you're running the spells, you can run him there as well. Is it Dismay? Oh, minus one to an enemy's resolve. Resolve. You can unbreak one of your units. Yep, and become inspired. Fear is the one where you... Oh, cannot seize. And Rancor, two extra stands. So, you have high defense. You have characters that can do things to harm the opponent or up your own units. Like I said, there are spells for upping plus to the defense, all of that. You have a variety of relics giving you things like Hardened, Fearless. The Burnout one's pretty funny. I do like that. Hardened 3 for your character, extra wounds, giving yourself a big cleave. Cleave 3, but giving yourself a whole lot of cleave. Rerolling your defense rolls for that character stand. There's a lot in this that can just make you survivable, that makes you hard to shift. It's your stat blocks as well. Excuse me. My apologies. As well as we see for a good amount of these upgrades and relics and all that you can do. Get yourself flawless strikes if you want to be able to do that. So, like I said, the other one I see that I mentioned here, it's this sort of defensive or stand back, let them hit you. They'll hit your units. They're not really going to do that much damage. And then you can counterattack into them. Then you can be sending your different monsters. You can send your automata. Or, at that point, you can send in units like Dragon Slayers, whatever it may be. Because your base units have ways to be very, very hardy. Now, not quite as much as it used to be. It used to be very common to be able to get certain units up to, like, defense 5. Luckily, that's not, like, a thing. Because that's kind of gross. But defense 4 with a hardened of 1, maybe a 2, depending on what kinds of thing you're doing. Nothing to shake a stick at. That could do tons of damage. Oh, my apologies. Because it's finally catching up with me now. So, those are overall the two main playstyles that I see. Alright, so, that gives us a bit of that. Let's talk about why to play them, why not to play them as well. Because that's an important thing to go through. For playing them, one, you play them if you just like dwarfs. Again, this is your dwarf faction in the game. Whatever miniatures game, realistically, you play, there's the dwarf faction. And dwarf factions play the way the dwarf factions do in most all games. You're defensive, you usually kind of sit back, let them come to you, sort of army. You can absolutely have artillery. It can be quite a bit of mass shooting. You got some monsters that shoot. You do have some shooting units. You have some units that charge me from the side, anything like that, doesn't matter. So you can kind of sit back, let them come to you, shoot people down, get into them. So you have that as an option here. So maybe you play them because dwarfs is a type of playstyle and game that you enjoy. They're a very forgiving faction compared to some of these other factions because you have good defense, good resolve across the board. I would say this is probably one of the easier factions to start. Now, that doesn't mean they always win you games. That doesn't mean they do amazing. But you can kind of just come right out of the gate. And if you end up, you put yourself in a bad spot and they're able to get a charge on you that you didn't anticipate because you didn't think about their movement amounts or something else, you're probably okay. You know, unless you're looking at a unit that like is cleave 3 and you're not one of the units with some hardened, it probably doesn't matter much. You're probably doing okay. Or at least you're not doing any worse, you know, than anyone else would against, not nearly as scary of a foe. So I find them, even rules-wise, if you think about it, the rule of a reinforcement, no, I'm behind that unit. I don't care where you are. Even that plays in a bit to the easing it up. If Arnkarwa is your warlord, yeah, all right, I broke now. No, just don't put a marker next to it. I didn't break this time. So no, I would say this is probably not for win percentage-wise, but for just pure gameplay, probably the easiest faction to kind of pick up and start with. Again, they could be hard to master. We could go around and round of, are they 2 points wise expensive for certain things? The abilities do enough and all of that. But if you're just starting out, you're probably going to be able. It's a high floor, I would say. You're going to do reasonably well starting out because the things that are concerning, you got good defense, good resolve, which as someone who's played with a faction that doesn't resolve very strong, or now playing a bit with my Sorcerer Kings, where some of these units are on like resolve twos or even resolve three, which this unit army tends to be on fours and all, even resolve three makes it rough because you just start losing too much. The other thing is ridden monsters. This is a faction where you can ride a lot of monsters for very cheap upgrades. Your Steel Shapers, sorry, your Sorcerers can take monsters. Steel Shapers can take monsters. Arnkarwa takes a monster. Most things can go on the back of something. So if you happen to like big monsters with characters, great faction for you. For why not to play them? I said no. I already mentioned I'm just not a fan. It's not my play style. It's not my kind of game. So I can appreciate what they do. I can appreciate that they are good for game design space in general. But I'm not a fan of just sit back and wait. I'm not a fan of the defensive style that they lead you to. I'm not saying you can't go rushing across the field and do a bunch of damage. I remember at a tournament we had, the guy had, I want to say it was four units of Flame Berserkers, maybe more. Boom, they're rushing up, everyone else falling behind them. You absolutely can, push forward and do damage. But a lot of times, I'm just going to, hey, come over here. I'm going to put you in a spot you don't want to be, and then I'll countercharge all of that. I'm not a big fan of just that sort of play style. I prefer to kind of, at least to some extent, go forward and try to get the job done. Nothing against them. Like I said, that's true in any game. Fantasy, never was a big fan of dwarves. In 40K, don't really follow Votann or anything like that. That sort of stand back to get punched in the mouth is not the gameplay that I personally enjoy. So, like I said, that's a personal choice, though. All right. There's a bit about why to or why not. All right. So, let's say for a moment now that you've decided to play Dwegg, and what do you do with this? Or how do you go about doing this? Like any faction, usually it's on page three. Hopefully the internet's working reasonably fast. It is today. Like any faction, the one-player starters are an absolutely great place to begin. Now, remember, there is the fifth edition. Those are the ones out for this year. The other ones might be a little bit more evergreen, but again, they might change them as well and see exactly what they change them to. If you look at the base starter, you're getting three stands of either Hold Warriors or Hold Ballista. You're getting three stands of Dragon Slayers or Hold Thanes. I would probably do Dragon Slayers. I do Dragon Slayers because Dragon Slayers are super, super good, and you need the ability to get through people's armor and the heavier units, because that's absolutely going to be a thing. And you get three stands of Initiates or Wardens. You also get a Hold Raw. So you get a fully legal little bit that you can run. Probably a decent amount of points because the Slayers are like 200 or like 190, a little bit expensive right now. But that itself is pretty good. What's in the fifth? I want to take a look at the fifth. Ooh, fifth, you get a monster. I'm personally always a fan of when you get a monster. So let me shrink this a little bit more so it's for anyone watching, it's a little more visible. You get a Rey Dragon Rider, the Ironclad Drake. You're getting now six stands of Initiates or Wardens, and three stands of Fireforged. So notice very different, other than the Initiates and Wardens. But having extra, that's fine because you could build one set as one and then a bit of the other. If you actually end up getting both of these sets, that's not bad. Gives you a monster, gives you a wide variety of units, gives you some pretty solid options here. And you could easily do, I mean, you'd be at 9 stands total between initiates and wardens. You could do 6 and 3. You could do 5 and 4. So you can figure out, like, what do you want, say, like a character to be in, a different type of character. Boom. Build them a little 4-pack. The other one gets a 5-pack. Gives you some options there. But I mean, yeah, whole wars, whole ballista. Because in that case, I'd probably do the ballista, get some shooting. The only thing is, what, you get a whole raw and you get a raw here as well. Raw Drake Rider. Yeah, that would be the only thing, is it's kind of a shame you don't get something different. But with this, you then could then go into your Steel Shapers or Sorcerers to kind of, you know, pull it out a little bit. And like I said, keep in mind that if you are trying to pick this up, we can save you 10%. Code below, it's Terrain Kickers is the code. Pursuit of Ogham, the 2,000 point at once army. This one, one of the cheapest ones, at just over 4. Which, like I said, you could have it for under 4 then with our 10% off, which usually these save you about a box or two. That would save you another box. Now you're saving actually quite a bit on this. What did they give you in this? They gave you some Infernal, some Flame Berserkers, Dragon Slayers you absolutely need. You got Arnakarwa, you get a Tempered Sorcerer. You get some Fire Forge, Initiates, Wardens, 2 boxes of Initiates, 2 boxes of Wardens. Whole Red Rider and Ironclad Drake. All right. Again, I'm not huge on Dweg, so when I look at this, I don't get like super crazy excited about it. But I do see how this is a cool and valid 2,000 point army. You know, I think it can probably perform quite well when we're taking a look at. Sorry, here it is. Because I'm not great with the names of all of their units. So Hold Warriors, I'm trying to think about. I don't think so. Let me see. Initiates are the ones I was trying to think of. They're the ones with the shields. Because they're defense 3 with big shields, defense 4, resolve 3, big enough unit, really resolve 4. Support 2, the Devout, Iron Discipline. They don't care if it's side or rear. So when a regiment is engaged or suffers wounds from it, it does not lose support attacks and does not reroll successful morale, so you don't really care about getting hit in the side. Shield, you care a little bit about, obviously, because that doesn't go away. That does go away. But otherwise, you're pretty strong. So when we look at that big list, I'd probably build out the way they do. I would probably build 6 stands of them. They're the ones that are going to sit off to the sides to try and grab me back objectives. I have my big old monster there. I have my Dragon Slayers. They're going to be pushing up the boards to try to hit the opponent. And then in the midline, I'm probably leaving like my Warden units, you know, my Sorcerer there to be casting out the magic. So he wants to be in midline with those type of units. Same idea of like where like Flame Berserkers are trying to go. So they're going to try to grab the middle. And then I have my monster and the other one to hunt down important objects or get into the backfield or get further into the opponent's line, so that way they're not really getting saves unless there's someone very defensive in evades like Nords. Let's assume you weren't just going one giant army at once. Personally, of the other two, I like monsters, so I'd probably go with the 5th edition one. Though the base starter set is not a bad plan either. From there, kind of depends on what you want to do. If you want to run into the Sorcerer sort of avenue, you're probably looking at that sort of magic avenue. A Hellbringer Drake with a Sorcerer to sit on top. Although if you're just starting out, and that's a little bit much to be able to, for the amount of things you get, for a bit more, you can essentially get, you know, a large part of a force. That's a thing as well. I'm not sure where I would go from there, honestly. Either one of them, I would probably say, which character do you want to get into? I'd want a Sorcerer, because I think the Sorcerer is quite strong. So I would probably be trying to aim towards one of those. That's all just regular people. And, well, some special stuff, but essentially some regular people. I would probably go with more Dragon Slayers as well. A three pack just probably isn't enough. Three can get destroyed. Because if you start losing a stand or maybe even two stands, now you're not really getting the output. So I'd probably go with more Dragon Slayers. Either get Dragon Slayers or get more Dragon Slayers. Otherwise, you probably have a good amount of Hold Warriors off of one or the other. If you're building one as the Hold Warriors, some Hold Ballistae to again get some shooting into your opponent's list, or sorry, into your list. Make them have to engage you the way that you want, because otherwise you'll just plink down the damage on them. They actually do have some STLs now. I actually did just pick this up 2 days ago. I had an issue with my printer, so it just didn't print right, but that was my printer. I had to relevel the bed and all. But I'm going to start printing up some dwarf terrain. So hopefully in the future you will see Dan's Dweg with some dwarf terrain hanging out in the field as well. That'll take me a little bit to get done. And telling him he has to paint up his Dweg. He's waiting on hell, but no, he's got to paint up Dweg. So that's probably what I would do for them. Like I said, I would probably start going Sorcerer, Monster, and then also Dragon Slayer, because I want the punch. You probably, off of either one, have just about enough of everything else. All right, so that does it for Dweg. My hope is that this came across in a non-negative way. Like I said, I'm just not a fan personally, but that's me. Out of all these factions, I would legitimately play almost all of them except this one. When it goes to 100 Kingdoms, I wouldn't do a foot list, but I would do the horse list for sure. Absolutely love that. Almost bought that box, like I said, when they did the 2,000 point army there. Spires, the 5th edition Spires box, I just saw it and or resaw it and just thought about it. The fact that it's essentially Lineage Highborns and Avatara, I don't need another faction, but otherwise, oh man, that box alone looks great, and it's like 800 points. So it also fills out a giant chunk of a list, and then you can kind of delay on some of the drones. Ooh, love it. Most of these factions I would play. The one I like the least, I said Dweghorn. After that, probably Wadroon, but that's just me. I'm not an orc player. I was an orc player in 40K. I'm just not an orc player now, or that type of orc personally. It just doesn't really appeal to me. In certain ways, these guys are almost more orc-like. Orc and dwarf-like, obviously, but more orc-like in certain ways because they want nothing more than to fight. In some systems, dwarves aren't necessarily known for their wanting to fight, but more of having to fight or trying to maybe clear a book of grudges kind of idea. But not, they'll go to war over simple things, but they're not going to war just to fight. Where here, it's much more common that you're just fighting because you can fight, not because you have to fight or because it's a good fight or a worthy fight. So, I said, I'm not a fan of them personally, but hopefully, if you are, I was able to give you some ideas about it and keep your excitement up. I'm always excited to play against them. I'm always excited just to play the game in general. So, and is it the thing is they're a little bit negative play experience. Not too bad, but a little bit. And I think honestly, that's probably really the reason why. In a lot of systems, dwarves are a little bit negative play based. Because I sit back, I do something, you have to come to me. They dictate what you do, and they usually don't let you do what you want to. You have cleave, half the time it doesn't matter. On a bunch of units, it doesn't matter. Oh, even when I have like terrifying, well, my resolve's so good, a minus one, I'm still great. So they attempt, unlike other factions, they try to deny you your rules. They try to deny you what makes you special. So that's just not for me, but hey, if it's for you, great. All right, so do thank you for listening to this. Like I said, we have some other stuff coming out. Like, so I'm going to be, as of recording of this, I'm going to be doing a battle report the next day. So if there's anything you are interested in seeing related to Conquest, if you're listening to a podcatcher, hop on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, sit there. Write down in the comments below. Tell us what you're looking for. Are you excited about Dweg? Do you feel kind of like I do, where it's not really your sort of thing? Let me know what it is you're thinking. Let me know what it is what you're planning to do. I always love read. I don't always respond back to comments, but I absolutely read them all. I just only respond back when I feel I have something to say other than like, yeah, because I don't know that. That sounds trivial to me, but if I have something I can say over a line or two, I will. But I'm always excited to see the sorts of things that people say and their thoughts that they have. If you are listening to this just on the podcatcher part, I do ask that maybe hop over to YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, all that kind of stuff. It all honestly, truly, truly matters. But we put this out in both formats. And like I said, there's a bunch of other content that we only put out on YouTube because like battle reports and all. All right. That belabors the points all enough. So on behalf of everyone here at the show, then, have some good hobbying and some great gaming.